coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast. We're recapping the monsoon-filled, pants-splitting Sunday. It was an interesting one with the match part two. And we're also officially 2 weeks away from the return of the PGA Tour. So we'll dive in a little bit more and see what exactly that looks like. Plus our takes on the returns of some other sports. And we have two great guests this week. First up, Dylan Wu from the Korn Ferry Tour. He's gotten off to a great start on that tour, looking to get his tour card. And we get into what he's been doing the last couple months. Plus our second guest, finally, Michael, we have a caddy on the program. Teo Gomez, PGA Tour caddy, who was on the winning bag for Sebastian Munoz last year at the Sanderson Farm. So he walks us through what that Sunday was like, and we get a real kind of behind the scenes look from Teo as well. Great guests. But first, we got to let you know about our partners at BetNow. It's our favorite sports book, and sports books, they're coming back now, Mike. It's the season where we're getting things back. So I got to kind of change the tenor of my message, because it used to be about how there was nothing going on, but you could still bet. But we're bringing golf back. We're bringing it back soon. So there's a lot of action 24/7 around the globe. Lots of ways for you to win. Again, it's betnow.eu is our go-to sports book. You can bet on sports races, to horse races, to Madden simulations, to baseball and career and everything in between. Our promo code is COURSELIFE to get an additional 50% in your account when you deposit. Again, promo code COURSELIFE. Bring some action to this quarantine and join BetNow today. Again, that is betnow.eu and the promo code COURSELIFE to bet and win now with betnow.eu.
Interwebs, and welcome to another edition of Course of Life, presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, Groove It Golf, and Quantix Golf. We are also part of the Belly Up Podcast Network.
Right.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything happening in the world of golf, plus other things that interest us, the world of sports and pop culture. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, two Sundays in a row of golf.
Yeah, we're spoiled.
It was just so amazing that even Tom Brady's pants could not contain themselves.
That's right. They had to socially distance, according to his Twitter feed after the match. Big time, interesting PR day for TB12, indeed. Yeah. And last Sunday's the match part two.
he was checking his DMs a lot. He needed a phone caddy for his phone, so he wasn't keep putting it back.
Desperately. Sad sight when Tom Brady can't even afford a phone caddy. You know, the taxes are rough there in Florida, but I had no idea it was like that. So, you know, again, it was fun watching the four of them out there, though. Tom Brady and Phil Mickelson against Peyton Manning and Tiger Woods. It was kind of a dream bucket list foursome. Tiger and Manning squeaked it out. It didn't quite feel as close to the score, but overall, I don't know about you, but I was thoroughly entertained for the afternoon.
It was a good 18 holes of golf, to say the least. Even, you know, it was, we talked about it during our hot mic stream, which was fantastic.
It was.
If I do toot our own horn there.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, Tiger was Tiger. He was steady as he goes.
Striping it. Yeah.
Phil was Phil, inconsistent as always.
Lecturing everyone on how to hit every shot. Yep.
It was pretty spot on, too, when he would then deliver after lecturing. Tom Brady was us. He was hacking his way around the course all day.
We're wondering about his handicap, Mike, because he said he clocked in an A handicap, but his first six holes, he looked like a 28 handicap and then delivered out of nowhere the shot of the day with a holdout wedge.
Holdout wedge and then promptly split his pants on the seventh
right
hole.
After. Unbelievable, man.
And then Peyton Manning, the surprise of the day. We knew his wit and charisma was going to be on full display, which it was. He got a lot of camera time, but his golf game was just spectacular.
He won the quarterback battle against Brady, and he usually didn't win those on the football field. So he finally exacted some revenge there. And you could tell in retirement, he's been working on his game a lot more than TB12 had, and it showed. And again, Mickelson was just trying to pick up Brady all day long, got a couple of moments from Brady, but outside of that, really nothing. And it was just an uphill fight for that team the whole way. And Tiger Manning eked it out, and you're right. Peyton Manning looked really impressive overall. So I definitely give him the nod over TB12.
It was It was awfully fun. I want to see more Peyton Manning on a golf course.
Definitely. I know. It's like, and everyone was kind of talking. We were talking last Sunday afternoon about, I just feel like there's some endless possibilities for what we could do with these matches. And this could be fit in any time. You know what I mean? We don't need to do these on a Sunday when there's absolutely no sports. Like, we can do these on a Saturday when there isn't a Sunday finish to a tournament and when the guys aren't playing. You know, we can really open this up.
And this was the most watched golf event of all time.
Yeah, cable television all time, but it's still impressive. That's more than like major championships on TNT with PGA championships and all sorts of events that have done throughout the year. So it showed that a lot of people were tuning in. And the basketball one that I just saw, Mike, for a match, run it back with Tiger and Phil, but give one of them, one of Tiger or Phil, Steph Curry, and give the other one Michael Jordan. How good is that one, huh?
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
There's a lot of possibilities.
It's Jordan.
You know, obviously, just like I said, it should be Tiger and Brady. Now I'm saying it should be Tiger and Jordan, but I don't know. Phil and Jordan could be an electric trash talking team, whereas Tiger and Curry kind of seem a little bit more reserved in the way they conduct themselves on the court. So that could be a good yin and yang.
Yeah. I mean, I do think it was good to see Peyton Manning and Tiger together were a good mix because Peyton did all the trash talk and Phil did all the trash talk for Brady because Brady was too busy trying to find his ball and then figure out where to drop it after he went in the water hazard. So,
yeah, well put. It was an interesting dynamic. But yeah, again, having the mics on and having that live auction, that action from an audio perspective, watching them playing the pouring rain was fun and extremely humanizing as well, too. Watching them trying to get in the round before the sunset was also very humanizing. That's something you and I have done many times. So it was a good experience overall and it filled a little bit of the sports free gap, definitely on a Sunday. So nice work by everyone who put the match together.
We are now just a couple weeks away from real live tournament golf.
Yes, 2 weeks.
Coming back. What have you heard? What is going to be happening?
Yeah, so it was interesting. So one of the guests that we had on our Hot Mic stream, again, Hot Mic app or hotmic.io, we're gonna do this in the future for maybe Sunday finishes on the PGA Tour. Well, we'll have different guests on and you can live watch with us when you're watching the broadcast on Sunday. But we had Abby Witt on and I asked her, since she hosts PGA Tour The Cut on the Golf Channel and she's out there in the field at a lot of these tournaments, what are the kind of policies and restrictions in place? What's it going to look like? She said, well, it's going to be fairly normal for us, but the thing is, there's going to be no fans, so they're trying to decide on things like, are there going to be ropes all around the golf course from tee to green and lining the fairway? You wouldn't think you need those, but there are carts and personnel like that that are kind of going in between parts of the course that have to get around. So the thing that we were talking about is just kind of the infrastructure of tournaments and what those are going to look like. For someone like her creating content, it's going to be very nice because she'll have a lot of freedom and no fans, but it's going to be very awkward at the same time. Yeah. That's the conclusion. Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. And of course, a couple pros have already started sounding their alarm as they return to Colonial. What are you hearing there from the likes of Lee Westwood and Adam Scott?
Yeah, so Lee Westwood, well, you'll appreciate this. I'm sure you saw on Twitter, obviously, well, anything with a crowd is going to get attention on social media right now. And Hilton Head Island got a lot of attention this past weekend.
Just up the road from me.
And Lee Westwood retweeted an image of Hilton Head Island saying, ... And this is where we're going to have the second tournament back on the PGA Tour in a few weeks. So he was a little alarmed nonetheless. And Adam Scott saying he's not really going to play in any tournaments. He's going to stay overseas. I believe he's been in Australia for a while. I'm not sure if he moved countries in the last 2 months, but he's been there for a while and he doesn't anticipate coming back until at least June or July, maybe when that WGC event takes place a couple weeks before the first major potentially in August, as weird as that sounds. So again, we're going to have a lot of pros back and the field at Colonial is going to be loaded, not Tiger loaded, but a lot of the best are going to be there. But there's also going to be players on an international stage that are going to be taking their time and have a more gradual return to play in the U.S.
Yeah, you know, what I will say again is just, what is the tour doing about exemptions on their status? Guys like Lee Westwood and Adam Scott don't need that. They also have the bankroll where they can sit out for a year and be fine. Yeah. But the rest of these guys that are out there grinding that need to play to get their income, what are you doing about these guys if they don't feel like it's safe to return to the tour yet?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that all works in the next couple of weeks. They put out a lengthy policy on the PGA Tour website. surrounding exactly what they're doing logistically. I will say they have a very, very, very pragmatic, upfront, and detailed approach surrounding testing, which is a big buzzword that gets a lot of people going in a lot of different directions. But there's going to be at least three tests tournament week done to every single player, caddy, tour member, anyone who's going to be on the property. So that alone, seeing that, was definitely an impressive step. So we get 2 weeks away now, and we'll be getting some more details as we lean up to the tee finally getting pegged at Colonial.
In the meantime, we're still under some sort of quarantine. My work furlough is actually ending.
Back to work. Oh my. What a daunting thought. I have no clue what that's like anymore.
It's going to be really interesting going back to work since the full-time job is in retail.
Yeah, so you're going to be dealing with smiling and happy customers, right? They'll be just so glad to see you, won't they?
Hopefully I don't see their smiles.
Their smiles are better. I'll be interested to see what your report is next week, and we'll check back with you next week on that. But I guess we're kind of in these final few weeks, it feels like, for everyone. Like, you know, these are like once we return to golf, we can get back more into the sports focused things. But there are, you know, there's still quarantine activities to be had. A lot of people are still locking it down to stay safe for these last few weeks before we get back to some sort of normalcy. So what have you been watching in the last week since we touched base?
I haven't been watching a whole lot. I've continued what I started watching last week that I talked about, which was The Great on Hulu. Did, however, watch a Oscar-nominated picture from last year, The Lighthouse, starring Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson. It is very good, but it is brutalistic. It is a difficult movie to watch.
What a word, brutalistic. Yeah. Yikes.
You hear it's an art house movie. It is... it was very good. The more I think about it after watching it, the more I realize how much I enjoyed it. But it was very difficult in the moment to kind of sit there and go, like, this is good.
Noted. Not for the faint of heart. The Lighthouse. Yeah. Got it. Okay. And mine is interesting just because I'm constantly in that state of, like, I'm just trying to go back to, like, the simpler times, you know, when things weren't as easy, weren't as hard in the world. I told you how I was flipping through and listening to the old CDs last week. Well, now I'm just going back to the old sitcoms and the TV shows that remind me of my younger days. So I'm DVRing Frasier episodes. I'm watching 90s sitcoms like Friends, Everybody Loves Raymond. I'm even throwing on Full House reruns while I watch my evening dinner. I'm looking for just happy, just like pie in the sky TV right now. And the 90s sitcoms have been delivering.
Yep. I mean, why not? You do what you got to do.
Yeah, it's been a treat, and it's funny how much is still lodged in my brain in terms of remembering episodes, lines, and moments from these episodes. I don't know why my brain is still keeping that information, but I've got it.
You know, we are like where I feel, at least for Seinfeld, about 5 seconds. All I need to do is hear about 5 seconds of a Seinfeld episode.
I can tell you what the
episode is, what's going to happen next, what actors are currently in that scene, and. You know, I could just give you the entire episode.
And I can't tell you how much our wives love us for that, right? They really appreciate that.
My wife hates Seinfeld. She can't stand watching it.
So nothing better than you recapping the episode 5 seconds in. That's exactly what she loves. Yeah,
exactly. Other hobbies we're doing seems to be for both of us right now. We've become some home gardeners.
Oh, the green thumb. That's right. Yeah. Yes. I haven't dabbled in it in a long time, but I figured, crap, I'm home every day. I mean, why not tend to some plants, right?
Exactly.
You have a little bit more of an organized garden than I do. I just have one pot with a gigantic tomato plant that's growing rapidly right now. But what have you been getting into?
I mean, we have a tomato plant. It's been bearing some fruit for us. Already had quite a few picked off there.
Jesus.
All of our radishes matured. We pulled all those already. We got a poblano pepper, a jalapeno pepper plant, banana pepper plant,
and
a hot bell pepper plant, and we have some regular like sweet bell peppers as well, like mini bell peppers.
Mike, you got to make a salsa.
I'm going to have to. The big thing though is we have two cucumber bushes that have just exploded. These things are massive.
Oh, are you going to get in the pickling game? You could go down that avenue if you want to.
I mean, they're not pickling cucumbers. That's the thing. We may have to put them away though.
Man, what's your secret on these tomatoes? Because mine have been, I feel like, flowering for weeks now. And they're about the size of a penny. So what do I need? Some steroids for them or something?
I mean, it depends on how much sun is it getting. Are you watering it every day or every other day?
Every day watering it,
It took a while, but once – and they were green for a long time.
Okay.
But now they're like they're all starting to change
That's
color.
That's slightly comforting. I'm at that stage. Okay. We'll keep everyone posted.
Yeah. Let's move over to our book report of Hank Haney's The Big Miss.
Yes.
About his time coaching Tiger. We got into chapter 3.
Quite a chapter, by the way.
Quite a chapter. Lengthy, like 50 pages.
Yes. I felt like I was back at school for a moment, for about five pages. It was, don't get me wrong, it's an entertaining book, but I was like, I did that, you know, moment in sixth or seventh grade where you flip to the end of the chapter being like, all right, how much do I have to get through here? Yeah. It wasn't bad.
Yeah. My big question through this chapter was, and we saw a little bit of this in the earlier chapters, is this going to be a book about Tiger or a book about intense golf swing scrutiny?
Yes, we're very much on the Hank Haney soapbox so far, three chapters in.
Yes. But I did appreciate that we got to learn that the best in the game are just like us. They are scared on the tee with their driver out.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Hank Haney kind of goes into a part for a few pages about how Tiger has some legitimate like mental blocks with tee shots. And it's funny because you do remember that over the years, even tournaments he's won, Mike, you look back to like US Opens where he starts with a double bogey and still won. I know he did that multiple times at Torrey Pines as well. And first tee shots have always been a nemesis. He goes with lots of irons and three woods off the tee. And it really isn't just like a course strategy thing. He actually kind of had a bit of a block and did during the time Hank Haney worked with him with hitting the driver off the tee.
Yeah. And then there also was that moment where he was somehow able to convince Tiger to, in the middle of a tournament, change the way he held the golf club, which I just can't believe that A, he had the balls to suggest this to Tiger, and B, the Tiger not only, you know, that he, I get that he got Tiger to agree to it, but the Tiger then said, I'm going to start using this immediately.
I guess power of a great coach, you know, he must have been very convincing. Good salesman as well to get him to do that, especially being the world's best. There, you're right, though. There's been a lot of talk about the change in movement in his swing and what Hank Haney sees as the ideal swing versus what Tiger was doing. And you can tell that Haney is kind of setting up the breakup already in chapter 3 and like leading us down a yellow brick road of all the reasons why things went astray. So it's interesting to kind of see that play out in word form.
Yeah. And then we also got a lot of info about Tiger as the man. And I think if we were to bottle it all down into one thing, I think we can say that Tiger is a bit of a dick.
Yes. Yes. I was wondering if they were going to touch on, because this has been a long rumor of Tiger Woods is cheap. That's just been a thing you've always heard forever and ever. But like there's actually some text behind it now, and you can find lots of stories about the tips or lack thereof that he gave at, you know, Vegas nightclubs and restaurants and all sorts of places, golf courses around the world. And it is just a very interesting sticking point to a guy who's so legendary for him to be such a cheap guy overall. And you're right that the cheapness extends into some other misbehaviors as well, which I'm sure we're going to get into in the next five chapters, which led to all that downfall. Definitely.
It was, I had a little bit of a problem where Haney seemed to say like Tiger is selfish and only thinks of himself, and that's why he's so successful and that's why he wins so much. But at the same time, that's like, but you can still be selfish in terms of your game and how you play and let you're out there to win, but you can still be a nice guy.
Yeah, and I think honestly,
like Tiger really is just not that nice of a guy.
I think there's just a little bit of that envy on Haney's side of Tiger letting him in as a swing coach, but not letting him in as like a friend and a confidant the way he may have wanted to. So you're seeing that.
I think the rest of us in the world define friends in terms of how you allow people to get close to you. Whereas Tiger considered Hank Haney a close friend, one of his closest friends, but Haney was like, really? We don't discuss anything personal. How are we friends?
Different definitions indeed in chapter 3. That was an interesting look. Any other final notes from you? My one that I had to point out was Ian Poulter bumming a private plane ride off of Tiger Woods. That was a great moment in the chapter.
I loved that he bummed the ride, and then Tiger texted Hank Haney in the middle of the flight as Haney was talking to Ian Poulter.
How about this dick bumming a ride off us?
Love it.
Good stuff.
Let's move over to this week's first featured guest.
Let's stick with the golf.
Yeah, an individual who's currently fifth on the Korn Ferry Tour money list. Just incredible. We're getting better and better all the time here.
I first spotted him at a recent mini tour event. We talked about this. I mentioned his name a few weeks ago because our buddy Monday Qualifier Info, Ryan French, put on a stream of the Scottsdale Open, and I got to watch it the first day, and he was following Dylan Wu for 18 holes. And that's how I first learned about him. And I was like, crap, Dylan, I'd seen his name before, but this guy was banking on the Corn Ferry earlier this year. So it was interesting to connect the dots and tie off with him as well.
We'll have that chat in just a moment. But first, I want to let you know about our partners at Groove It Golf, creators of the Groove It Golf Brush. And by the way, Groove It and Desert Fox are doing a dual giveaway right now on their Instagrams. You got to go over to either Groove It Brush or
either one.
Desert Fox. Mm-hmm. You got to like both their pages. You got to comment on their post, and you could win some cool swag from both of them.
Our favorites. Yeah.
It's pretty awesome stuff. The Groove It Brush in particular, though, is unique to golf accessories because it's got a patented pump that sprays water or your choice of cleaning solution onto the club face. And then you can scrub it with their 3-year bristle guaranteed bristles.
The best.
So you get a really clean club. You don't need to worry about those dirty brushes out there on the course, which on most courses aren't even there anymore.
Yeah, they're gone. So you got to get a Groove It.
Social distancing, so you got to Groove It. And you can get maximum backspin distance and accuracy with each shot. So prepare to be amazed what can happen when you have clean grooves in your existing golf clubs. So head over to grooveitbrush.com to get your Groove It brush today and check out their Instagram so you can win a Groove It brush and a Desert Fox foam caddy.
Next up on the tee from Scottsdale, Arizona, we have a pro who is currently fifth on the Corn Ferry Tour money list at a Northwestern university. And he recently caught my attention for his play in a mini tour event, too. We'll get into that as well. It's Dylan Wu joining the Course of Life. Dylan, how are you doing today?
Good, Alex. Thanks for having me.
Definitely, man. Yes, I want to talk about, you know, before things kind of went a little bit haywire in everyone's life, and especially in the world of sports and golf, the season you were putting together on the Corn Ferry Tour, what was definitely impressive in terms of 2020, the calendar year, you know, 6 starts, 6 made cuts, you know, a bunch of top tens in there. What were the keys to you, you know, playing well in that stretch between, you know, January and March?
Yeah, I mean, this year has been great. Couldn't really have asked for an ideal start. I mean, other than winning a tournament, I played well in all 6 events. I think I learned a lot last year from, last year I had conditional Corn Ferry status, and then I got into an event in Springfield, Illinois, and finished second. That was kind of late in the season, and then I kind of had to play there every week after that, and I had some inconsistent starts or finishes where I'd miss a couple cuts, and luckily I still finished in the top 75 to keep my card for this year. But learned a lot from just having those 13 events last season, learning what I needed to do, what I wanted to do this off season, what parts of my game I wanted to improve on. But my goal this off season was just trying to be a little more consistent, kind of just have that mental attitude of grinding for every shot, really just no matter what, even if I make a bogey, double, or even a triple, I mean, just move on to the next moment. Every shot on the Corn Ferry is just matters so much more, when you're just getting so close to the PGA Tour. So, yeah, luckily the first 6 events, I felt like I battled pretty hard. My game was good, but had a couple really good tournaments where I had chances to win the tournament and still finish near the top. So no, I mean, it's been a great start of the year. I think just having not only just working on the stuff in the off season on my game and just getting better, but having a good mental perspective and mental strength, especially under pressure, has helped me a lot. Just kind of having the attitude just to grind it out and fight no matter what. I mean, it doesn't need to look pretty, just post a number and get the ball.
No, definitely. So, I appreciate that too. And it's shown obviously early, and you're giving yourself that leg up to potentially get yourself a card when it's all said and done. I know this season's going to be maybe a little bit longer than your average one, but you've definitely given yourself a great start. And obviously I'm sure that you must've been kind of disappointed when March hit and everything went down. You know, obviously I know there's greater things going on in the world, but in terms of just where your golf game was trending, you know, what was that kind of that moment like when you realized that, you know, tour events are stopping in terms of the Corn Ferry and you might have to, you know, kind of hunker down and devote more time to maybe practicing at home?
Yeah, it was definitely disappointing for sure. I mean, I think at the beginning I was like, oh, maybe only a few events will get canceled. It's going to help me get closer to
same here. That's what I thought.
But then I'm like, yeah, this pandemic's just growing and growing. I mean, the past 2 months. So, I mean, Yeah, I think kind of realized during the stretch when we weren't playing, just talking to people and hearing more news that it was more likely that it was going to be a wraparound season. The reality is it's just hard for everybody. I mean, the guys on the PGA Tour who got their cards last year on the Korn Ferry haven't played enough events. Say if they had a bad start, it wouldn't really be fair to them. If they had a shortened season, it'd be really hard for them to keep their card. So, you know, it just kind of stinks for everyone a little bit. It's just the reality of coronavirus. I mean, now you see like 1 in 5 people being unemployed, and there's stuff outside of golf that have been really affected. I mean, luckily, no matter what, when we resume, like, I'm in a good position no matter what. Like, my spot in the money list is still the same. So we're planning to resume in June. But yeah, it's looking like we're going to be playing like a 40 to 50 event season, including next year. So, I mean,
crazy to say that. Wow.
Yeah, the reality is just some things are out of your control, and you just got to just kind of keep grinding. And luckily, as long as I'm still playing in events, just try to keep playing well. I mean, the only way to get to the PGA Tour now really is just win 3 times, get that Battlefield promotion to the PGA Tour, which is easier said than done, but that's basically the only way you can get to the PGA Tour from the Korn Ferry the next year and a half. They still have like the small thing where if you, after this season, if you finish in the top 10 in the money list, you get into the opposite field events next year. But
oh, okay.
I don't know how many guys who actually finish in the top 10 will do that. Say you're 10th on the money list next year and you can play in a PGA Tour event and skip a Korn Ferry event. But in reality, things, is it really better to skip a Korn Ferry event when points matter and having full status on the PGA Tour matter? Like,
right. Play well, really just kind of solely an experience thing there, I guess. Yeah, maybe exactly. Just if you want the opportunity to play, you know, Barbasol or Puerto Rico, yeah, or something like that.
Yeah, because it really doesn't really get you anything.
Or, yeah, Dominican Republic.
Unless you win the tournament.
Right.
If you're going to play well in the PGA Tour event, you're probably going to play well in the Korn Ferry event. So it's kind of better to get your priority number for the Korn Ferry and money list as high as possible for next year. But yeah, it's just kind of a bummer for all golfers that aren't on the PGA Tour, just because the money on the PGA Tour is just way better. But I think feel kind of more sad for my other buddies who say have status on McKinsey Tour, Latin America, or China, that there will not be any Q School this fall. So they have to basically wait. I mean, the next chance of maybe getting the PGA Tour is like 3 years from now.
Yeah, and we've talked about that in the last few weeks on the podcast too, about how there's some guys who've been saying that, you know, I've been, you know, giving this a go to get to, you know, the Korn Ferry, the PGA Tour for years now. You know, this Q School was going to be my last go at it. And just, yeah, to hear stories like that, definitely disheartening.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm luckily in a good spot where I've made money this year. I can still like live fine and living a good life still. So I'm still in a good position. So just can't wait for the season to start in June.
Let's talk about kind of when it dawned on you at maybe that moment as you realized that, you know, there were some other tours that were still going to be operable and opportunities for you to play competitively, being in the Scottsdale area. I'm not sure kind of what setup you had for, you know, home golf and practicing. I don't know if you had much course access, but what was that like kind of figuring out that there were going to be events locally that you might be able to get yourself into, specifically the Scottsdale Open?
Yeah, I mean, luckily, I mean, the coronavirus has affected a lot of parts of the world, but like, honestly, in Arizona, you don't really feel it too much. It's a very suburban area versus a lot of bigger cities. Weather's warm. So you don't really feel the effects because the courses have never been closed here.
They weren't in Texas where I am either. So
yeah, so they weren't closed at all. I mean, there's safety precautions now. I mean,
with
sanitary stuff, but luckily I've been able to practice and play every day, like if I want to, which is nice. So like my life hasn't really changed too much. So now that I'm here, it's been nice to that the tour here, the Outlaw Tour and the Golden State Tour, have been operating the last 2 months. And if I'm here and I still want to work on my game and stay competitive, I'm going to play in them just to make some money. I mean, I played in three mini tour events before the Scottsdale Open. I played the Scottsdale Open this past week, and then I'm playing one more mini tour event next week at TPC Champions Course. And then I'll probably be done until the Korn Ferry starts the second week of June. But
okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep myself busy here. My game still feels good. I mean, if I'm playing well, might as well play in something to make some money to pay some of the bills, which is good. But yeah, I think it's nice that all the courses have been open here and the tours have been running. I think, yeah, people are still playing golf here. It's still really busy. It's a really big part of the economy here in Arizona.
Yeah, and you've been able to stay really sharp, which is definitely important for you in the long run this season too, with a potentially long season upcoming. One thing I wanted to touch on, Dylan, is a mutual friend of ours who we know was a previous guest on this podcast, The Course of Life, Ryan French, who you know on Twitter as the Monday Qualifier Info Guy. Yeah. I want to first get into and ask you, how long have you been following his tweets and known of that account? You know, we just had him on the last month here, and he told me that kind of he had plans for streaming potential mini tour events and really digging deeper into the broadcast aspect of the mini tours. How long had you been following and known about his account?
I think I've probably known about his account. I forget when he started it, but last year, when I did have conditional status from 2018 Q school, like I was doing a lot of Mondays, just to get into Korn Ferry events, doing some Mondays for PGA Tour events. So I think maybe January of 2019 is when I first started following him. I know he's from Chicago. I mean, going to Northwestern, I mean, talked to him a little bit, and then all the stuff he posts is super fascinating, and people don't really realize the reality of pro golf until you get to the PGA Tour. It's like, yeah, we're playing you're a professional golfer, but like you pay for your own expenses and stuff like that. Like you don't have any contracts like any other sport, so like you're kind of doing everything on your own. You need support from other people and stuff like that, and it's hard until you make it to the PGA Tour. And even if you make it to the PGA Tour, you gotta play well. It's not like you're playing in the MLB or NHL or NBA and you get to the league and then you have a terrible year, you're still going to get paid. You might not get bonuses, but you still get your contract. Versus with golf, it's all performance based. So like last year, was talking to him a lot, just about my journey and stuff like that. He's been great. I still talk to him. I talk to him kind of weekly lately, just because how big the Outlaw Tour has been. And Golden State Tour has been the last couple of weeks with the live streaming of their events. He's been just asking and talking to me about it, and it's been great just to get some coverage and exposure, because we're like the only sports that have been going on the past month.
Yeah, he does a great job of really highlighting the stories the guys on the mini tour guys who are grinding to get to the top. It's a great profile follow as well.
Too. I mean, with golf nowadays, the level of play is just so much narrower than people think. That's why you see guys, young guys that can come from college and make a splash in the PGA Tour right away. It's just like the reality is, if you're not in the PGA Tour, now you basically have to go through Q school to get to the Korn Ferry. And if you play bad at second stage every year at Korn Ferry, then you're kind of done. I mean, second stage isn't easy. That's where everybody goes. Basically who lose status on the Korn Ferry, and it's
Ryan has a very famous tweet of his that says that there was a second stage of Q school in 2012 where two guys named Jordan Spieth and Brooks Koepka both missed out.
Exactly. So I mean, Q school is not easy. You can ask anybody, like Q school is not easy. I mean, Monday qualifying and Q school are two different things compared to playing a tournament. I mean, a tournament you can kind of scrape it around and make the cut, versus a Monday qualifier you kind of have to keep the gas on the pedal and go super low. You can shoot 65 and miss easily. And the same thing with Q school. I mean, you could just play bad, have one bad day at second stage, and you're done for the year. Or like you have nowhere to play for a year.
It's very fickle and just separated by a shot or two at times, which you know better than anyone. It's been cool to see those stories. And so mentioning the Scottsdale Open, you know, he set that stream up and it was a really cool idea because, you know, you're a name I'd seen on leaderboards and knew you were on the Korn Ferry, but hadn't got a chance to see your live golf in action until that stream became available. And it was neat to check you out in action. You played a great round when I watched. And I just want to kind of get your thoughts on that, because you were very open to be able to take questions from the guy who was you know, filming you guys during the round. And you know, what were your thoughts on just that experience being part of the stream and what that future might look like for streaming events in the game of golf?
Yeah, I mean, I was just I was talking to Ryan about it, but also one of my buddies was the streamer. Like, he caddied for one of my buddies on the Korn Ferry.
Okay, cool.
Events, so his name's Ethan. So like, I was talking to him beforehand. I'm like, he's telling me that he was going to stream the event. I'm like, yeah, you should follow my group. He's like, yeah. So he followed my practice round in the first round. But no, I mean, this is great. I mean, for us, the mini tours, to get some exposure and highlight, and for people to actually see, like, we're actually pretty good golfers, or like some of the mini tour guys are actually really good players. It's really cool to see. So like when I was doing the stream, like, of course, I mean, at the end of the day, I want to play my best and stuff like that. But at the same time, you also want to entertain people that are, see, like, the sports bettors or anything like that.
Oh, yeah, you have a fan base, Dylan. Trust me. If only you saw the chat during that stream, have a legion of fans that week, for sure.
You were telling me that after the second round, they didn't follow me, but the first round, and I was talking to Ryan about it too, they said I had double the amount of views in the first round versus the second round.
So that's, like, great.
No, I mean, for me, it's just, all I can do is here is just help, not only just show like my, who I am and where I came from, my brand and stuff as a golfer, but just to help out. I mean, I love what Ryan's doing with the Monday Q info and spreading awareness, and the facts he provides is, I mean, people just are astounded by the stuff he's providing, and it's awesome. And for him to have a live stream event at the Scottsdale Open, and how to have such a high quality, like, following of the tournament and the stream, like, the stream was very high quality. I was looking at it during the background. I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. I mean, it's nice to, I mean, even on the Korn Ferry, we only have a few televised events every year. If you're not on the PGA Tour, you don't really get televised at all. So, no, all I wanted to do was just kind of interact with the audience, have them ask questions. I'm like, you can ask me anything during the round. Like, I'm pretty, of course, at the end of the day, I want to play my best, but, like, I'm not here trying to peak on the mini tours and grinding to make every single dollar and getting super angry if I play bad. Like, this is all just preparation for when the Korn Ferry starts again. And some people treat mini tours very, very intensely. And I still want to play my best, but I want to have a good time too. So no, it was definitely a really enjoyable experience. And
I appreciate that. No, and appreciate you being candid, and you played great too. So it didn't seem to bother you answering the question. So.
No, it's fine. That was good.
So, the one tip I wanted to get from that round too, and I won't ask you for too many. The one question I had really was regarding your putter. That particular round, that first one, I don't know how much you remember, but it kind of started off a little bit slow, but your putter heated up as the round goes on. And this is something just for all the amateur golfers listening at home that they can definitely agree with. And I just had this experience on the course yesterday, you know, where, you know, you don't see the first few putts go in the hole early on in the round. And a lot of amateurs get very frustrated, and then they never see another one go in the entire round because it's way too in your head. You know, just talk about kind of what you're saying to yourself when the first few putts aren't going in, to, you know, make sure you're keeping a consistent stroke and eventually get those results.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the week before in the mini tour event, I putted really bad. Like, I was like, I remember I was like 200 through 8 holes, but I just missed 6 putts in a row from 5 to 7 feet for birdie. I'm like, geez, yeah, terrible. But I mean, everybody kind of goes through that. I mean, the reality is that with golf, like, we're the only sport that plays on a different surface every single day. You're playing in different conditions. You're playing on imperfect putting surfaces. You have imperfect lies. Like, there's so many things that you can't control in the game of golf that all you can really do, especially with putting, is hit a good putt. I mean, that's all you're trying to do. Like, the hole is supposed to just get in the way. Like, you could hit a bunch of great putts and it hits a bump and it doesn't go in. Like, you can hit some bad putts that go in. It's just the reality of it is that it's not like a basketball hoop that's the same size and the ball is the same size every single time. It's like the putts break the different way every hole. You have different distances. You're putting on different greens when you play a different golf course. So I think just the variabilities are much different, but also just like, you kind of have to tell yourself, like, if you're hitting good putts, they're bound to go in. Like, just keep on hitting good putts. Like, don't get down on the fact that you're missing putts. Like, if you have, if you're just missing a few putts and you're hitting good putts, they're going to drop soon. Just having
you control the stroke. That's the only thing you control.
Exactly. So. You hit the ball, and then after you hit the ball, you have nothing to control over after that. The reality is that, like, putting is, you can be very streaky with it, but I mean, at the end of the day, once you do see the ball go in the hole and you're kind of just with golf in general, if you're nice to yourself and have the right attitude, usually it goes the right way. And you might have one day where you putt poorly, but I mean, as long as you have the right attitude and don't focus on things you can't control, then you'll be fine.
Very cool. No, I appreciate that tip. It's again, Dylan_Wu59 on Instagram if you want to follow as well. And I got to ask, based on that handle, have you ever shot a 59 in your life?
I did. Yeah. Actually, when I, my first 59 was actually here, like in a skins game, like a So like the Outlaw Tour does like skins games every week where they play like a 1 day event.
Okay.
Like money games here. And it was a par 70 course here in Scottsdale last March, I think. And I shot 59. So that was pretty cool.
Very cool. What was this score on 18? You finished with a par, birdie, what?
I finished with a par. Yeah. I actually had like a 30 footer and I left it like 6 feet short. So I didn't make
it 6 footer. Pretty. Love it. 6 footer for 59. Good stuff. A couple more rapid fire questions. You come from a big time golfing family. I'm curious, at what age were you starting to be able to like beat your parents and beat the family, win those family matches?
I think the first time I beat my dad was, I think I remember with my father and son tournament when I was about 12. 11. 12. Yeah. 12. Yeah.
Nice. Good stuff. And then. 71. One of the other things I want to touch on regarding your childhood too, in your bio, it said one of your earliest memories is carrying a set of Snoopy golf clubs when you were a toddler. I looked those up. Those are like kind of like the funny, like really bright plastic ones, right? That you carry around your shoulder.
Yeah. It's like in a Sunday bag or a small Sunday bag. Yeah. I remember like when I was first playing the game of golf, like those are my first set of clubs. So it was pretty awesome.
Very cool. And then the one other thing I wanted to touch on is obviously Chicago, your background, Northwestern and where you've been originally from. I see on your Instagram that you're a Cubs fan, just like my wife is. She's from Illinois as well. What are your thoughts on kind of just like the state of baseball and like if it comes back, you know, without fans and a half a season, like kind of where does your head sit as a Cubs fan dying for baseball to get going?
I mean, I think it's for golf, it's easy to play without fans because I mean, you're kind of in the zone, but like any other sport, say whether it's baseball, basketball, or football, like fans are a huge part of the atmosphere. So it's definitely gonna be super weird. Like I'd be weird play. I mean, you're up to home plate and you're hitting, and there's nobody in the stands. It'd be so much different a dynamic. I mean, at the end of the day, I just hope that all sports can get back going because I think, I mean, people you've seen with the sports betting on this on mini tour golf that people are
seriously
want. So for sports to come back. So I think that at the end of the day, hopefully just every sport can come back this year. Hopefully this coronavirus just keeps on dying down and hopefully the pandemic stops.
Damn it. Yeah,
just let us watch TV and watch sports. I mean, people are bored as heck. So
absolutely. And speaking of bored, the thing me and my wife have been doing a lot is we're going like really crazy on like the theme nights and like ordering different foods and getting all sorts of different cuisines and whatnot. You're a big Chicago guy, so you'll appreciate that. We actually had some Portillo's Italian beef sandwiches shipped to our door here in Texas. We had some Lou Malnati's deep dish as well. So I got to know, what's your favorite Chicago food? Is it the Chicago dog, the Italian beef, or the deep dish pizza?
Probably out of those three is probably the deep dish pizza. We actually live right now, our apartment complex in Scottsdale is across the street from a Lou Malnati's.
Nice.
It's pretty cool. They have Portillo's here.
I got Portillo's at the Waste Management. That's right. It was my last experience there.
Yeah. So no, you see, I mean, people say that the biggest, I forget what the saying is, but like the biggest city outside of Illinois, outside of Chicago and Illinois is Scottsdale.
There's just basically
so many people here. So that's definitely a huge foodie here. I almost love food more than I love playing golf.
Good stuff. Awesome. Again, it's Dylan_Wu59 on Instagram. Dylan, look forward to following your play once we get back to some normalcy in Corn Ferry. We got some events coming up in San Antonio. So hopefully if you're at those, and we get those off in July, I'll see you there and hit them straight. All right.
Perfect. Thanks, Alex. Appreciate your time.
Definitely.
Great chat there with Dylan. Really cool hearing about his game and all that. And of course, you are going live with him right after this episode drops on Tuesday evening on Instagram. And then that entire interview with him from Instagram will be on IGTV on your account, Course of Life. Alex, well, I keep forgetting which is your Instagram.
You're so close there. Course of Life 1 on Twitter, Course of Life Alex on Instagram. So I'll be putting that up. It's going to be going on Tuesday night, but it'll be on my IGTV for as long as you guys want to watch it. And yeah, hey, Mike, Dylan, He's cool with VJ playing in the event, so mark it down. I'll keep asking more players just to see what the tally is, but 1-0 right now. Players supporting VJ, so we'll see where that goes.
I appreciate it. Speaking of VJ, in Chapter 3 of The Big Miss, Tiger said that he respected VJ, but he didn't like
it. He did, yes. Exactly what a lot of people think, so.
That's right. Real quick, let's talk about what's going on our Patreon page. $2 a month. Starting at $2 a month, you can get access to some blogs and cool content. If you want to up how much you give from there to support us, you'll get access to our 19th hole as well, where right now you can learn extra putting tips from Sean Lanyi, who usually charges like $20 for 5 minutes or something like that.
Seriously, right now, it was a great putting lesson that you can literally take with you right on the putting green, throw it in your earbuds while you practice. It's good stuff from him. And I'm doing my blogs. I talked about the highs and the lows of last Sunday's match and got into detail what I liked and didn't like, so you can check those blogs out as well on our Patreon, and all the more content we'll be providing.
Coming up next, we're going to have an interview with Teo Gomez, PGA Tour caddy. It only took us like 2 years, Alex.
We did it.
2.5 years. How long have we been doing this?
Yeah, Teo's got some great stories, though, and he was a joy to talk to.
He was indeed. But first, Tom Brady needed a phone caddy.
Desperately. Yeah. Did you see him DMs. Just throwing the phone? Like, yeah. And Tiger checked really, really briefly too, but he was mostly like off phone. But yeah, Brady kept checking his DMs, kept trying to throw tweets off, and he just like haphazardly toss it back in that compartment where everything goes to waste.
Horrible. What he needed was a phone caddy from Desert Fox Golf that mounts the phone right onto the golf cart.
Exactly.
With sliding wings and a flex plate that adjusts to any phone. Velcro's on the golf cart in seconds. He could have been ready to go in no time in those tricked out golf carts. It would have been fantastic. Indeed. So you can keep your yardage and scoring apps open and at your fingertips. You can change music, answer calls and texts, and more with the phone caddy. It's the most functional way to keep your phone safe and ready at all times on the course. And you can save an extra 20% off your purchase with the promo code COURSEOFLIFE. You can get different colors for your phone caddy. And have it there on your cart so you're ready to go at desertfoxgolf.com. And like we just said a little while ago, with the Groovit Brush, you can win some free stuff. Head over to their Instagram accounts and you could win a free phone caddy.
Dual giveaway.
And a free Groovit Brush. But, you know, you should get one for yourself anyway. Head over to desertfoxgolf.com and get your phone caddy.
Next up on the tee from Cali, Colombia, he's a caddy on the PGA Tour for Sebastian Munoz, a world traveler, and he's quick on his feet as well, too. We'll get into that. It's Mateo Gomez joining the Course of Life. Mateo, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing awesome. How about you?
Pretty good, man. As good as I can be. You know, obviously, we miss, you know, having golf around full time. I know you probably do as well, too. You know, how are you spending this this time off from caddying?
It's been a little tough though, because I'm used to travel and I really like it a lot. So it's been a hard time, but I'm trying to stay busy. I actually started a new program on a triathlon club. So I'm working out a lot right now. I'm riding and I'm running indoor. I have plenty of space to run. So I've been working out hard and just trying to stay in shape and get ready to go.
Man, you're doing a lot better than a lot of people out there for staying in shape. Nice job. I saw that you have a bike at home as well, too. And you're riding, like, how many miles a day are you going? I saw you going some pretty insane distances.
I'm on a program, so they set it up. But normally, it depends on the day. We have, like, some days it's just, like, strength. Some days we just got to ride for, I don't know, 2 hours, 2 hours and a half. It gets tough some days,
Yeah, I imagine.
But it's fun. I like it.
No, definitely. It's keeping you in shape. And a lot of people don't realize, you know, not only how heavy that bag is that you're carrying, but what that walk can be like on certain courses on tour. So you definitely need to stay in shape for those moments. I'm curious, how is Sebastian doing? And have you had any time to talk with him recently and any updates from him?
He's doing awesome. He went back home for like a month and a half, I think. He was just working on his fitness also. And he got back to Dallas, I think it was 1 week ago.
Okay.
So he's now back in Dallas. He's practicing with his coach and everything. He's fine. We've been playing for night every once in a while.
Nice. Yeah. Good to see. Yeah. Good to see you're dropping in during quarantine together, being teammates. Yeah. Nice. And yeah, in terms of Dallas, it seems like that's the plan right now, is to try and start things in June there. So he's well positioned for hopefully a return to the PGA Tour.
Yeah, I'm supposed to fly on Monday, so we'll see how it goes.
Okay, good stuff. Exciting there. Let's talk a little bit about your background in caddying and whatnot, because a lot of people in the golf world, that you always, there's always interesting stories about how caddies, you know, come to be on the bag of the world's best players. What's your background caddying? I'm sure you have a background as a player as well, but how long have you been caddying for?
I started last year in the John Deere. So that's about like 8 months probably. Mm-hmm. Around, so yeah, so we basically grew up playing together at junior golf with Sebastian, so we've known each other for a long time. We played a lot of tournaments, amateur tournaments representing Colombia. Then I went to college. I played for Lynn University in Boca Raton, Florida. Grad from Lynn, and then decided to turn pro. That was 2017, and I started playing here in Colombia. Played some events, did pretty well. Then 2017, I played Q School in Europe, and then missed second stage. And from there, I started playing Mexico, some mini tours in the States. And at the end of my like professional career, that was like 2019, I guess, I went to Asia for 6 months. So I was there, and that time it was when Sebastian called me and he told me like, dude, I'm about to lose my card. You should come and help me. And I was like, yeah, let's do it.
Nice. Good stuff. And obviously things changed for the better there in a great way. Let's talk about that magical week, the 2019 Sanderson Farms, in which Sebastian Munoz won with you on the bag. That had to have been really special for you. You know, you guys, so you had only been together with him as a caddy for a few months. What was that week like for you, and what memories do you have from the winning week?
Yeah, so I remember when I first got there, we had to play the John Deere, and he was ranked like 130 in the FedEx, so we were out basically. And he told me like, dude, we're in the spot. I mean, we have to play really well. So we're on the spot. So it was kind of a little stressful, because I mean, I was used to play golf and think as a professional, not as a caddy. So I had to adapt real quick.
Yeah.
But it was fun. We started to play well. We finished like 30th on the John Deere. Then we went to the Barbasol. Then we went to Barracuda. And then we played the Windham, and we finished 124th. So it was really close. We didn't miss a cut. We made two top tens, so it was tight. Then he played the Greenbrier, and I didn't caddy that tournament for him. That was the first tournament of this season.
Yep.
And I didn't caddy because I was on vacations, and then I got back and we went to the Sanderson Farms, and I mean, it was brutal. It was just like such a special week. We wanted really bad to win, so it was fun. We stayed very patient and things went our way. It was awesome. Like, it was unbelievable.
Is there a special memory, or, you know, when you think about that week specifically on the course with him during the four rounds, do you have a specific memory or a moment that sticks out between the two of you?
Yeah, last round was tough because he was playing really well. He was putting really well, so he was rolling the ball good, but the ball didn't want to go in, so it was like, it was a little frustrating, but I was just trying to keep him positive and on the present, and I was like, dude, we just got to stay present, don't worry, it's gonna come wherever it has to come, so just keep grinding. And then I remember on 15 we made a bogey. It was a par four, like 325, 330. Oh, wow. And we were like short-sighted, very close to the green, like 15 yards, but the light was not very good, so he chunked it a little bit, hit it in the bunker, then he hit a good shot from there, and he didn't make the putt, so he made a bogey, and he was about to collapse. He was like, dude, we're out. And I was like, no, we're not out. Let's just three more chances, let's give it a try and we'll see what happens. And then he parred 16, good par. Then on 17, he made a good putt for par. And then on 18, he made a great putt and put us in the playoff. And then we won.
Very cool. And that moment at 15, definitely the turning point for him, and it steadied him. So shout out to you for giving him that advice when he needed it. I got to imagine for you, since, you know what it's like to be a player. Was it more nerve wracking, for you playing in tournaments or you being a caddy at that moment in a week like that? What's more nerve wracking for you?
It's weird. It's so different that I don't know. It's weird because I felt really comfortable. I don't know why. I was very comfortable.
That's good.
Like, I felt that before, so it was like, I mean, I think in that moment I didn't even realize we were playing on the PGA Tour, and it was a playoff. I was just like living the present. So that's why maybe I felt so uncomfortable. Obviously, when it was over, we were shocked. Like, wow. I mean, it happened. Like, wow, unbelievable. We just won on the PGA Tour. But yeah, so it's different, but. But it's fun. I like feeling those nerves and all that stuff. It's really fun.
Very cool. Good experiences indeed. It's at Teo Gomez Golf, T-E-O Gomez Golf, hashtag Team Teo as well, too. Mateo Gomez, the caddy for Sebastian Munoz. And one highlight that I have to talk about, since I went out to the tournament a few months ago, one of my favorite tournaments of the year, the Waste Management Open in Phoenix. I saw that you posted in there on your profile a funny photo about the caddy race on the 16th hole.
Oh yeah,
you with the wheels. Talk a little bit about that atmosphere in the 16th hole and you racing the other caddies to the green.
Yeah, that was fun because it was a new tournament for Sebastian too, and he was his first time, so it was such a weird scenario where you could hear all this noise. It was so weird. Like at the beginning, I couldn't believe we were playing a tournament with all those guys, everyone drinking. Like it's crazy. So I remember first round on Thursday, he made a par, good par. Then on Friday, we made a double.
Oh boy!
But we were both like. We're nervous, like both. We were like, let's just make par. And then on Saturday, I was like, I mean, if they want to run, I'm going to run. I got to break the ice. If I break the ice, my player, I'm sure he's going to be more comfortable. And like, who cares? So I was like, I'm going to run and I'm going to win. And then it helped. He birdied that hole.
Oh, he just needed a distraction. He just needed a distraction from you, Teo.
Yeah. So it was really fun.
What did you guys think about that week? And I know that's something that right now only happens maybe like once a year on the PGA Tour, but it's unique in that the 16th hole, it's a rowdy environment. It's like a football stadium. Is that something that you would be cool with seeing more on the tour, or do you like it just seeing it once a year?
You either love it or you hate it.
Yeah.
But there's no in between.
Definitely.
And I like it too. And Sebastian loves it. He was like, dude, that's the best tournament of the whole season. I was like, okay, so I guess we're going to be back.
Yeah, man. It's my favorite to go to as well. I've been to a lot of tournaments and going there. Obviously, I was there on Saturday this year. It was the last trip I took. And you know how crazy it gets there. Good time for all fans.
It gets loud and crazy. Yeah, it's fun.
Definitely. I'm curious.
It's so fun that when we're playing, I wish I was not working.
Right. Yeah. You wish you were up where we were having a drink, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The bag gets heavy. I know how you feel. It gets warm out there in Phoenix, too. But I'm curious, out of all the tournaments that you've caddied so far, you've been to a lot of different stops. What's been the most enjoyable stop for you? Whether it's, whichever one treats the caddies nicest, or maybe which one you've enjoyed visiting the most on the PGA Tour?
I'll say probably the Genesis Open.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a really nice tournament.
Torrey Pines is beautiful.
They treat us really well. It's nice. It's very nice.
Good stuff. I like it. Hey, again, it's Teo Gomez Golf. We have a few more quick questions that I want to get to before we sign off. A lot of people wonder whenever they talk about, conversations with caddies, the golf world and the golf fans wonder, how heavy is the bag? I'm curious. Do you weigh the bag often, and how heavy is it? And is there anything in there that Sebastian maybe could take out to make it a little lighter for you?
I don't know. I think it should be around. Probably what, like 45 pounds?
Yeah.
I guess around that. It depends. Like, yeah, sometimes it gets heavy. Like when it rains, it's terrible. It can weigh probably 70 or 65. Everything is so heavy. That's the worst day for a caddy when it rains.
Yeah, and you have to do all the stuff with the umbrella and keeping the glove dry.
And everything's slow and you got to keep everything dry. So that's, I mean, I got to say it, but that's a mess. When it rains, it's a mess.
So you'd rather have it be, you know, a freezing cold day than a day where it's, you know, pouring rain all day, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. Good stuff. And then the other question I wanted to ask is what have you seen, you know, on the PGA Tour? What's maybe the wildest moment or shot, you know, whether it's a shot that you've seen from Sebastian or just something in a group you're playing with? Have you seen any, you know, crazy hole outs or hole in ones or what's a wild moment you've seen on the course in the past 8 months working on tour?
The putt Sebastian made for the playoff. That was
brutal. Yeah, definitely.
Because the thing is that everyone wanted him to make it because when we finished the tournament, most of the guys from the town, they were like, man, we've never had a playoff. This tournament, normally someone wins by three, by two, so there's no action. So they won it. So you could feel they won it so bad.
That is very true. And for anyone who's been to a PGA Tour event, when you're at the 18th green and you hear the roar for one of those putts, it makes your hair stand up on the back of your neck. Definitely gives you chills. So to be there in the front row, I had to be amazing for you.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Very cool. And then the final question we like to ask our guests here on the Course of Life is when you get, especially when you get done, Teo, because that bag's heavy, when you get finished with 18 and you clean off and you get to sit down, what's your go-to meal, your favorite thing you like to eat, and maybe your favorite drink you like to have when you're done walking 18 holes?
I'll go Whole Foods all day.
Yeah, what do you do? Go to like the buffet and make a plate, or do you go somewhere specific?
Whole Foods, eat a lot of food and then get maybe a kombucha and go to sleep. Stretch, recovery, and sleep.
Good stuff. I got to say, that's one of the healthier answers we've gotten here. So you're definitely a man of his word in terms of health and fitness.
Fast food.
I like it. I appreciate it. Hey, Teo, thanks so much for joining. Best of luck to everything for you and Sebastian on the bag as well, too. Hopefully we get back to golf soon, and good luck. Okay.
Sure, man. Anytime. Take care.
And we're back. Great chat there with Teo Gomez. Really cool to hear what it's like to be on the bag during a win.
I was dying for that caddy perspective, and I've been trying to get that on the show for a while, so we're definitely going to do that more often, because him describing his guy, Sebastian Munoz, draining that putt to go to the playoff in 18, like it makes the hair stand up. You know, when you hear that roar at a PGA Tour event, that's the unique part about golf, is it creates those really spontaneous moments of excitement, and it was cool for him to kind of give us that walkthrough. And then like you heard, Mike, Teo gets down on the bike with his ride, so you need to follow him if you need some motivation to ride or exercise or workout. Make sure you're hashtag Team Teo and following him, because he definitely gets after on the bike.
Love it. Let's move over to the NFL real quick.
Are we bringing sports back update, and if so, how? Real quick.
Who knows anymore?
So it's still technically the virtual offseason for the NFL. They haven't decided if they're going to extend that through June or not. And basically what they're deciding is how are they going to do the OTAs, the offseason, you know, workouts, the optional workouts that can be done for players. And it's seeming like those are going to be done virtually as well, too. Obviously, we're kind of at that, like, I feel like July is going to be that breaking point, being like, all right, preseason games coming up. Are we doing, you know, fans at all? Are we doing limited fans? Are we doing anything at training camp? So again, it's gonna come fast with as fast as this quarantine's gone with those decisions for football.
Here's my other question for you real quick before we move on. Dak Prescott.
Oh my
will
God.
Play for the Cowboys next season.
The amount of money Dak Prescott turned down was absolutely unbelievable. That guy is so mediocre.
So much money as it was.
Ridiculous offer, yeah. Good shout out there, Dak. God, not the guy, for sure.
No. Let's talk basketball real quick. You had that great idea of them all playing in the Disney Wide World.
Oh, my God. This is sadly gaining a lot of momentum, Mike. I cannot tell you how excited basketball fans on Twitter are about bringing the whole league to Disney World starting in a month and a half. But this has actually picked up momentum. The idea that they could split up conferences by like different sides of the campus. There's over a dozen courts, and there's over 10 different hotels where they could split the league up. Mm-hmm. It's gaining momentum, and it could be that the post Super Bowl moment. We're going to Disney World. The whole NBA could be going to Disney World soon.
Well, you know, it would be. Would be money for Disney, and Disney World needs it right now. So oh, yeah.
that prized Disney, ABC, ESPN lockstep partnership, you know, they desperately approve of it, I'm sure, with the NBA ESPN TV contracts as well.
Yeah. Crazy. All right, let's hashtag let's
do it. Yeah. Brought to you by our friends at Estelle's Meats. If you need them, meat shortage, trouble getting meats at the grocery store, or just don't want to go at all, promo code is GOLF10 for 10% off. Thanks to everyone who's already bought. 10% off all purchases. Again, promo code GOLF10 for Estelle's.com. Estelle's. Mike, I had the campfire weekend last weekend. Did a lot of good grilling. Did s'mores to the max. That was fun. What's in the upcoming look for you in terms of your food? I know you're baking like crazy still.
I literally have bread rising in my kitchen right now.
Oh boy! Wow, we're doing a live bake here on the podcast. Very exciting stuff. How's the yeast treating you? I know you got a new shipment recently.
Oh, it's doing great.
Good stuff.
Best thing I ever did to buy a giant 1 pound brick of yeast.
Nice. I don't have any baking plans or food themes set for this week. That could change by Friday for sure. But shout out to our buddies at Settle It. I have a wager coming up. Our buddy Jake at Settle It challenged me and sent me a really, really hot ghost pepper queso, which I'll be trying live maybe in the first few days. Maybe I do it this Saturday on the weekend turn on Instagram live in front of everyone. So we'll settle that this weekend, and I'll tell you exactly how hot the ghost pepper queso is and give my true Texan review. Yeah.
Love it.
Good stuff.
So you're not a true Texan.
I'm a decade
sorry.
In, Mike. I don't know. I'm a decade in. It's getting to that point where I might be able to say it.
I've learned anything living here in Savannah, it's that I won't be considered a local for another five generations.
Five generations. There's the tradition in the South right there, ringing true. Good stuff. Again, that was hashtag always end with food. Thanks again for everyone joining this week on Course of Life. We have two more great guests coming next week. As always, check out our lives on Instagram. We're at COL Podcast. I'm at Course of Life Alex, and you're at MWRINC. Everyone enjoy their week, and we will see you next week.